Blog Talk Radio.
Evolve around the issues concerning women veterans, particularly Black women veterans, which is our topic today. I am so excited that I have established a relationship with someone who is just so involved that makes my work over the past 30 years so worthwhile. So I want to just let you all know that we're in for a treat. We're going to have a robust discussion around women veterans issues as they pertain to Black veterans and in general. We want to highlight Black women veterans because our voice is somewhat silenced in the broader scope of our issues. And I really believe that we have the best voice here to bring these issues to the forefront in terms of the range by which she covers in her work. So I want to introduce you to this point, at this point, LaKeisha Stringer, who is just phenomenal. She was a panelist in our last Veterans Brain Trust Women Veterans Panel, and I just believe that she is the voice of the future. In terms of advocacy, impactful change, she is a change agent for sure on our issues, and we're going to bring her in just a moment. I just want to lay a little foundation as to where we've come with our series in this discussion on Black women veterans health. I do believe all roads lead home. LaKeisha Stringer has been involved across the spectrum as both victim and survivor in many healthcare concerns, and we want to make sure that her voice is heard for the encouragement that she will bring to other women veterans across this country, because I believe that she represents the survival, the perseverance, but yet the strength that we all can possess if we just had someone that we could identify coming through this channel, as we call transition from women veterans issues in our active duty service. Women veterans of course, you know, we are a representation of our armed forces since the very beginning of our wars. Without going too much into history, our series is going to take a, I'm going to say, a progression of discussion. Our series has taken from the introduction of what this information may entail, and we are inviting others to participate and join us at well, but this recording has 17,500 votes, views since the last time we spoke last week. So I think that's a considerable number to move forward to know that people are interested and are checking in on what we have to say. And we're going to continue to give them that type of a rich dialogue so that they will know that we are still present in the midst of things. And we have the articulation and certainly the professionalism to bring forth a valuable conversation so that we can begin to dissect some of the challenges and barriers. The challenges and barriers as well as the, excuse me for one second here. I am the engineer here, and as well as the the host, so you just have to bear with me while I get my stuff together, because I am working with several different pieces of equipment. We're actually doing a Blog Talk Radio as we speak. I'm not able to get this person in here. Okay. I do believe I just allowed someone in. I hope that I did, and I hope that they will stick around so that we can continue on with our discussion. But nonetheless, the foundation for this Women Veterans Speak Blog Talk Radio began back in the early, I guess, 2009. We started this conversation with women veterans who basically were recovering from Iraq issues. Much of my guests at that time were victims of military sexual trauma, and they had somewhat of a clouded perspective on where the resources were and how we were communicating beyond what has been a very fragmented platform, where many great conversations are being had, much work is being done, but I do not believe that we are connected in a way that we're actually making that impact. So I began the Blog Talk Radio basically in an attempt to centralize some of that dialogue so that we can begin to see all the great work that people are doing all across this country. People are just doing great things, but I think individually the impact is minimalized when we are not united here on our efforts. And this platform here, we've had conversations around some of the congressional hearings, particularly with the military sexual assault hearings that began in 2013, where the Congresswoman Jackie Spears was very aggressive in bringing some of the issues to the table. However, what I saw and witnessed was there was an omission of the population as it is represented, particularly as it relates to someone needs to probably mute one of their devices. If you have a phone and a computer both on, just beautifully. Hi, Miss Vicky. You're muted. I just wanted to acknowledge that you're with us. We have Lakeisha Springer. Let me introduce her again. Lakeisha Springer is an advocate, and she actually was a discussant at the 2022 Veterans Brain Trust on September the 30th here in Washington, D.C. Lakeisha Springer is a three-time deployed Iraqi Navy veteran who has many experiences, but I'm going to let her talk a little bit more, because this is part two of probably a five-part series where we are dissecting Black women veterans' health. And we're going to be covering the politics involved, some of the funding opportunities for nonprofits that are dealing with that. But we are bringing into the conversation now advocacy, from the voice of the veteran as well as the experience of those who have been or somehow back to some of the missed opportunities that we know exist here. So Ms. Latricia Stringer has kind of navigated throughout all of these very complex systems. And she's here to talk about her survival in that journey, but she's a strong advocate right now as an Iraqi veteran, and she's allowed herself to be used in this platform to help other women veterans understand what her challenges have been and how she's overcome them. But she's come back, what I call in this particular phase is rescue and recovery. So we are looking to rescue some women veterans who are out there and to help them to recover from some of their challenges. So I really would like to invite Lakeisha Stringer to give her introduction the way she sees it. And we are going to be taking some break to give her a chance to Q&A. So if you have any questions, of course, we had to have the hand raising. It's the hand raising. What is it? The hand raising sign there in the Microsoft Teams, or you could just send a message in the chat room and I will make sure that you have your voice. And we will also give you an opportunity to speak directly to our speakers because she is very open and extremely intelligent on our issues. So Ms. Stringer, please take the microphone and just by all means start where you left off, or you can reintroduce some of the information that you covered last week. Could you turn your microphone up, please? I think that maybe you may have turned it down. Did I cut everybody off? Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Come back on. We are in a little quagmire here. Let's go back to a break. Thank you. Thank you all for your patience. Can you hear me? Yes. Is there any way you can make it louder so that it's me. So I do apologize, Miss Vicki. You know, I am here being a engineer. We are doing actually two programs at one time, and you know, I am doing the best that I can right now. So thank you so much. Lakeisha, I think that you are going to be sharing at this point. Please go forward. Excuse me, Ms. Springer, would you care to introduce your apparently someone that I believe that I would love to hear from her at some point? Can you tell me exactly who it is that we are listening to with you? Yes, ma'am. I was hoping the kitchen would introduce you or let me know, because I tell you, I was impressed with her. Anybody that she's impressed with, I'm certainly impressed with. So could you please just let me know who you are, madam? I am incredibly honored to have you on this so that you can hear as your relationship has now been connected beyond Georgia. I will tell you that I was so impressed with Ms. Stringer, who represented at the Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust, which is 34 years old. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that platform. But in 1993, I went before Congress along with another black woman veteran who we established law, and the law from this congressional testimony, hashtag 10319 is what we're calling it. It's what two black women contributed to the legislation that mandated women veterans have their own treatment, all VA hospitals in this country. Prior to that, it did not exist. So that law that was created certainly is now where we are working to celebrate in 2023, which will be 30 years. So we are actually trying to bridge some of the transgenerational gaps in this conversation about the existence of this legislation. And we are constantly hearing conversations about what they're doing now, but it was two African-American women veterans back in 1993 that went to Congress. And the significance of Lakeisha being present there at the September 30th Veterans Brain Trust is that she was invited by Congressman Sanford to represent black women veterans. When I engaged her, if I could just introduce her to that relationship, how it started. As I engaged her, and I recognized that as a 30-year participant with the Brain Trust that probably has about maybe 5 to 10,000 veterans every year, I noticed that there was a scarcity in the audience for veterans compared to the years prior. Of course, we had done some virtual during COVID, but I locked eyes with this young lady who was in her American Legion attire and her regalia, and I was certainly impressed, and she reached out in a very friendly way that I not understand was necessary. So as she proceeded through the program representing continued to connect with her because as the event began to unfold, I realized that she was isolated in some degree. So the Black Women Veterans Forum was facilitated by Stafford Brown, Congressman of Georgia, Bernice Johnson, she's a congresswoman, and the presence for Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz out of Florida was very interesting, and Congresswoman Lauren Underwood out of Chicago, she is the appropriations chair of the Subcommittee on Veterans Affairs. And the initial introduction for Ms. Schultz was as a Jewish woman, and I began to see the expression on Lakeisha's face as the conversation ensued, and I thought that I needed to continue to support what I believe was a, I use this term, ambush. It was an ambush. I hope you don't mind my bluntness, but I'm way past the, it's amazing. So it's at the point where I realized that this young lady was there, and we had some conversation prior to her going up on that stage, but this was a very, very intimidating, I'm going to say, with these legislators. Joy Elam was another woman veteran from the DAV that I recognized, a Caucasian female. But the conversation initiated with a opening by Congresswoman Lauren Underwood on the Omnibus Bill. The Omnibus Bill is a bill about reproduction, maternity, postpartum, and that type of generalized woman issue where when she introduced it, I did not recognize the Black Women Veterans Foundation was being laid there. And as they were introducing the various people on the panel, they were introducing their race. And I thought that that was significant for me because it was clearly on all of the posters, it was a Black Women Veterans Forum. Black Women Veterans Health was the title. It had been the discussion prior to the forum, and I believe that while we were laying or listening to the foundation, I was looking around for somebody to connect with as historical for being there. I thought that was significant because we, most of us that attend each year, we have been attending for many years. The opportunity for us to talk this year about the campaign to kick off the 30th year anniversary for this legislation had been the discussion since, I don't know, for the past few years. And I wanted to just kind of lay that foundation, Vicki, because I think it is significant because as I was explaining to Lakeisha Stringer after the event, she understood the mission. She understood the mission. And this is why we are here today. We want to make sure that legislation 10319 continues to undergird the Black Women Veterans Health because it was the Women Veterans Health Subcommittee of the Veterans Affairs Committee that hosted this forum. I had just been raped. I had just come out of the military with a 15-6 investigation, which put the spotlight on me because of the documentation that was relative to Women Veterans Health at the time. That's how my presence got to be involved at that in that year. But we have to continue to connect the dots because there is still a strong disconnect. And I believe that there's a certain intentional omission of Black women veterans in legislation today, as well as in where we need to be to move forward. This must be something that we do from our perspective. And I know that was a lot, but it is a lot. And there again, Ms. Stringer understands the mission. She is conscious. She's aware of who she is, and I see that she has the kind of mentorship down there that I'm not worried about. As we were able to dismiss from the environment, I actually tried to kidnap her, actually, because I really wanted to make sure she was grounded back to where she could be in a position that I could connect with, that she understood that that was not what I believe was the intention of this platform. It's never been like that before, and I don't believe that it represented what we believe is women veterans, Black women veterans health. And the question that she has been answering or responding to in our forum has been the questions that she had presented to the legislation so that they could bring up these very pertinent issues on Black women veterans' health, including the level of population that we represent amongst African-American women and veterans. And I'm sure she's going to go over that, but I think this foundation is important. And we have the Honorable Ms. Wanda Petty on our call with us. She is I don't know where to start, but I'm just going to lay a little bit of foundation since there's just a few of us here. Wanda Petty is about 3 or 4 decades, but I want her to at least come in at some point to introduce her history as a military veteran and what she's done in the past 20 years. Post-military, and I want to just add that as we were reuniting as veterans after the event, I was able to get the American Legion National Commander Delphine Foster, who I knew very well, on the line to speak to give Mr. Keisha Stringer some words of wisdom, as well as some other very key veteran advocates across this country who we embrace and we are supporting 100%, and we want that message to be clear, that Black women veterans are here to support one another. And I think that this generation should be secure in knowing that we are out here, and this is what the message that we are sending here. And I thank you so much for joining us, because we must pass the torch. One of the things that I understand is that when I came from the military, there was no connectivity for me to resources or anything. I figured it out on my own and suffered along the way. But I'm going to make sure that that pathway is clear. And I believe that Ms. Stringer actually provides that impetus for connecting some of the younger soldiers. And I think you can agree to that, madam. Ms. Petty, I just want to honor you for being with us. And I'm going to give you just a few minutes to introduce yourself and just share a little bit, because out of respect. These are some worthwhile veterans that are coming to this platform, Lakeisha. And I want to tell you that Ms. Wanda Petty is, I don't say she's above her head, but she's swimming underwater. She's swimming underwater in advocacy and outreach to veterans on so many levels internationally, and I'm honored to have her. Ms. Petty, could I just get you to introduce yourself, please, and share a little bit about your history so that we can all know who we're talking to here?
All around the world that are seeking to be where we are. are, you know, and reaching back from where we once were to help them come forward. You know, that's what it's really about. And so I'm honored to be here and to hear what Ms. Stringer has to say. Thank you again, Kathy.
What does the Bible says about he is not a respecter of person? Let me just give you a little bit more about Miss Petty, that she is so very humbled to withhold. Miss Petty, like she said, we have years of training, but this training is valuable for empowering other women veterans, but it also trains and educates women to become business owners. And her impetus has been successful, and those with whom she's impacted, including myself, I can raise my hand, has been a benefactor to her work over the years. She has a plethora of resources within herself that she very generously shares with women veterans across this country. I thank you for wherever you are in this world today, because she's probably somewhere. I bet she's not home. But she travels all around this country. And I believe that we are just honored to have her, but I think that we are connected to a source that if she has taken the time to show interest and God has placed her in this space, that we must know that the value of her time is extremely significant for the work that she does. And she's at the service of so many women veterans. And to watch, and I want you to connect with her program and become familiar with her, Ms. Stringer, as a young, aspiring entrepreneur. Because she certainly knows the people. And what she doesn't know, we have figured out. But for the most part, I think that the successes of those who I've witnessed on her television program has been one that has been inspiring. You're talking about people that are very successful, you know, that have started up from just an idea. You know, she's a visionary realist. You know, she helps people bring their visions to a reality that they probably don't even recognize. And I thank you, Ms. Petty, for that very humbled introduction. But, you know, I'm going to tell it like it. T.I.T. is. So don't take it lightly. I will make sure that the information is made available to the network here, because I believe that God is enlarging her territory and the humility for her to draw into this space just connects. I mean, this is just a far-reaching opportunity for those who don't get beyond Georgia to have this kind of access, but I do believe that you will find a benefit in connecting to She Vet Inc., and I'm telling you, you will be so inspired. So all those things that you think were not possible, We are in the space that all things are possible with God. So we walk by that same understanding and belief. So, Lakeisha, I think that last week when you were on, we did have several of the leaders on that did give a clarion call as to what we were going to tolerate concerning any misrepresentation concerning Black women veterans in public spaces. And I do believe that that message was loud and clear to you. So here we are again this week with the same connectivity that I promised you that when you met me that I would not disappoint you. And I do believe that it is my intention and it is my goal that for all of that you represent in Georgia, that the message be loud and clear wherever you are connected throughout this world. And I know that your vision is what God has showed me. It's a kingdom building agenda, but it's also international. It is an international agenda, and I do believe that you have been surrounded by those who will connect you in ways that Georgia may not be the boundaries by which you should see now. You should see beyond that as your reality. And I want to open up the floor to you, and I will say that we are just a little bit over the half-hour part of the show, so I really want to get into some of the questions and continue to follow up with the women veterans health concerns that you brought to the table that they denied you. But again, this is not the forum. We're going to embrace you. We are going to support you. And we're going to allow whatever message that was missing from the Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust to be laid here. I also spoke with Mr. Ron Armstead this week. He is the founder and the executive director. And what he said to me was, before he makes any move, he said that he was going to wait to hear for the recorded version of that televised event to come out, to be released. And what I responded was, I do not think they're going to release that after me cutting up down there. I said, I let them know without any uncertain terms. That was unacceptable. I did not wait. I did not hesitate. This is something that you can't play with. It was Black Women Veterans Health. And I let them know at the door. That was unacceptable. You do not misrepresent Black women veterans who particularly are at a disadvantage across this country. And I have to speak strongly like this. I've kind of graduated myself, ma'am. If you hear some stress, a little aggression, I am what they call a radical militant advocate here. And I've earned this because I've survived 3 near deaths in the VA hospital. And I've just declared myself, proclaimed by God, that I am more than a conqueror. So I speak as a gladiator on the day that I come back to rescue and recover my sisters here who might find themselves, you know, caught up in the quagmire of the bureaucracy here. So, madam, before I say another word, please snatch this microphone and talk, and please. You know how I will, like it's a motor going in my throat. Please, please just go ahead and start talking so I can shut up. I'm going to put myself on mute right now.
Thank you.
Oh, she is the vice commander of the National American Legion. So she is the first African-American and... Oh, Patricia Harris is the vice commander of the National American Legion. So that position, of course, was the first held by an African-American woman, but she joined us in our last program. And you can actually tell your commander exactly what's going to happen at the end of this month, because I'm dying to say it, but it's not much for me to say. So she's the vice commander of the American Legion. Listen, I didn't want to put the cart before the horse, but I'm telling you, when she met this young lady, see, that's why I can't keep my mouth shut. Don't give me the microphone. So when she met this young lady, she was so thrilled. I called her right away to let her know how well, and you can be as proud, madam. She was so poised, professional. And when I talked to her, she was so conscious of who she was and aware. I mean, she's teaching me every time we have a conversation. She's just such a wonderful person, but she's an amazing woman veteran advocate. So I'll just leave it there. And I want her to expound a little bit about on Vice Commander. I was just trying to text her to see if I can get her on the line real quick. But I think y'all have a surprise in store for y'all at the end of this month. I'm trying to figure out how I can get down there. But please, I would just say that I was the commander, deputy commander for one of the posts here, the county of Pennsylvania. And I also served as the adjutant to our commander for the past year. So I'm just coming out of that role. So I know a lot about where we are with this. And Paul Dillard certainly did respect the work that I did for the African-American community. So we are continually to roll back the layers on exposing some of the things that are hidden and certainly having the right voices to make sure that it makes the right impact. So we are right in step with what needs to be done here with the American Legion. Yes. Yeah. I'll be down to Georgia last week. She actually told her that. And I just appreciate Patricia, because Patricia has a heart. And she, too, was so humble in how she spoke last week. I've been knowing Patricia for a few years. She's a strong supporter of what we're doing across the country here. And I tell you, she's very humble. But in the state of North Carolina, where she is, she's out of Raleigh. And what I do know is she's helping those young ladies who are involved in domestic violence, the homeless women. And I tell you, she is, when you meet her, you're going to meet her soul on her sleeve. And that's, I just want to leave with that, because, you know, she's just a beautiful, I love Patricia Harris, because she will go, She will go to bat for you. And let me tell you something. And she won't bat an eye. You know, and she stands there very proudly with those silver-haired guys. And you know what? They love her. They smile with her. And they respect her more than anything else. So I do know that you're standing in some great shadows there, Lakeisha. So just know that I believe that what Ms. Vicky is saying, I honor you, Ms. Vicky, because, you know, if we don't create that connectivity, it won't be established. So I just appreciate you for your years of service to the American Legion. And I just honor you for your commitment to reach back and help these younger soldiers to find their way into leadership roles. Listen, I can't wait to get off this phone. I'm trying to get to it before we get off so she can get on here. But, you know, I'm going to save that all of those accolades when y'all see it down in Georgia, because I'm really thinking about coming down there for this some type of a, I'm going to say, it's going to be somewhat of a opportunity for us to grow in a way where the American Legion has been a wonderful place for me to learn a lot about what goes on the inside, because I actually jumped from a county, from just being a member to the county adjutant. And, you know, it was during COVID, so I learned so much. We were able to raise our membership after they were going to shut down, I think it was about 100 posts in our district. We were able to raise our membership in 1 year to exceed the expectations and the quota and the criteria. So we were able to, that was a lot of hard work for me, and I just had to take a rest after that. But at least we were able to do what was necessary, because in those chapters, in those posts, was in the part of the urban community where they were African-American-led, and the membership had been met with much death from COVID and aged-out members. And so there was, I mean, that's a big there that we were able to bring up of the required 100%. I think it was 105% when we concluded the commander and I, who are a great team. We worked very well together. So you know the hard work that's involved. That's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work. Well, we should talk about that. But I really do think that the American Legion has a gem, and Lakeisha, and I'm going to call you Mama Vicky, because, you know, that's the spirit that I get, that you have our backs in a way where, you know, you actually created. You know how hard it is to start an American Legion and to get that membership and to maintain it for, what, 14, 15 years? Listen, they need to honor you every year for that. I'll have to call you off the air, because I see me and you got some catching up to do. But Lakeisha, this is about what we are trying to lay the foundation, because what's going to happen at the end of this series, it may take 4 or 5 series, but I have a plethora of, I'm a researcher. So my PhD focuses on African-American women veterans. So my research, I felt like it had been hijacked, as well as the historical legislation, #103.19, which is why this series of information is going to be archived in a way that I'm going to report on this to these congressional bodies who do not believe that black women veterans can be represented, because they said they could not find any black women veterans. And this young soldier, a Navy veteran, comes all the way from Georgia, and I do believe that Congressman Sanford should not be held accountable for what I believe was a misstep and a mistake in how they represented at this platform. But I will let them know that I think that will be the only time that would happen in the Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust. And I will sure make Ms. Wasserman Schultz, hopefully there's no funding in the pipeline that he is not aware of that he actually used this platform to do. But Ms. Wasserman Schultz, I think she should be committed. She should commit it to the Black Women Veterans Health and donate some of that $9 million and $9 billion. I never was clear on what that number was she stated there, but I do believe that that was an opportunity for us to identify with the funding that's available and to make sure that these Black Women Veterans organizations are recipients of some of that federal dollars?
That's $9 billion for women's health and
$13
billion for mental health.
And see, this is why we need you. Because we need to tap into all areas, and I think that a collaboration will be that whether the American Legion would partner with a particular chapter in Georgia, however it's done, I will find out that process. But I haven't seen anything in the federal funding portals. But as soon as it hit there, I will certainly be on the end. My research is certainly focused on African American women veterans, and this is where I believe the conversation will start to take another process, a format, and how I'm going to translate it into what I'm going to call a concept paper. A concept paper helps to identify challenges, what I'm calling challenges, barriers, and obstacles. And I'm going to look at some of the scientific dynamics on how women veterans of Black heritage, I'm talking about Black women who are descendants of slaves. I'm not talking about people of color or Black and brown. I'm talking about Black women specific to the Black Americans who are descendants of slaves in America who are disenfranchised, and I do believe being hidden in that, I'm going to say, acronym of DEIA, diversity, equity, inclusion. I think that we need to be specific about our identity and make sure that they understand. Within our venue, Madam Vicky, they refer to as what, the Blacks, the African Americans, and the minorities. And I do know that as I was watching Lakeisha, I noticed that her face was letting me know that there was a discomfort with that analogy there. And she was very poised through it all. I really want to jump on the stage myself, but I just tried to follow the protocol. But I will tell you that we were represented very well doing that. I'm going to say dismissive. It was a very dismissive dialogue because they kind of talked around everybody except Black women veterans during that forum. But we are going to rescue, what I'm going to say is this. In the 21st century, some of the issues that I address at the research level on women veterans health, Black women veterans research, is informed consent within our VA facilities. It's an omitted component for necessary research and experimentation. I am certified by the National Institute of Health on research and human subject participation and ethics. So when I'm talking to and listening, I'm listening for the violations and disrespect in how they are actually creating a narrative about us, but not directing it to us. So I think that there's a certain disrespect that is necessary to address by not identifying the worthiness of a woman who is Black, who has served in our armed forces, that we now have other persuasions defining who we are and talking to us about our women veterans health, you know what I mean, in situations. So I think that for what this purpose of this conversation, it actually has multiple legs here. And I think that the research aspect is where policy is. And this is another level that I'm at. I was a trailblazer where I was selected by the Department of Veterans Affairs in 2019, and I held that position for 2 years. It was somewhat of an ambassador for speaking out, and I'm going to make that transition here from what you said. When the VA was somewhat inundated with a suicide, 22 suicides a day, and my question was, why are veterans committing 22 suicides a day? There was a series of different assessment tools that were created, and one of those tools was the psychosocial rehabilitation distress measuring tool, which was to help veterans identify what their stress levels were. And one of the things that I brought to their attention was if veterans are dealing with having missed appointments, they're having these dynamics in regard to how they're getting to their appointment or getting treated, it was a crucial aspect understanding for me to see why these veterans were committing suicide. How are they committing suicide if they're in fact being treated by the VA? Where are the liabilities there? So some of these components included the fact that there are too many people unauthorized giving care to veterans, okay, who are not trained in combat-specific related trauma. And I do believe that the VA failed to prepare some of their psychologists to deal with the cultural perspectives in veterans. And another thing to your point is, and I'm going to say this, when I came out of the military in 1992, I had a Pentagon investigation on rape, after three rapes in the military. So when I went to the Philadelphia VA, told them my story, I had a box full of documentation. This was at the advisement of my release. And so the doctors back then didn't have military sexual trauma as a diagnosis. They did not have military sexual anything in terms of identifying with that sexual trauma from if it happened on military, you know what I mean, while you served. But because I fought my case while I won, there was no, it was undisputed that my case was valid. I didn't have to prove anything. But I'm going to tell you where the most crucial component is that I'm fighting today. The psychologist said that everything that I presented to her never happened. That happened to her. She said it never happened to me, despite that I had a box of evidence, medical reports, psychology reports, psychiatric support. The psychologist at Philadelphia VA said in 1993 that my situation never, ever happened. It was all in my head, okay? So for the next 18 years, I went to their psychiatrist. I seen all of them, went through all of their dynamics at the VA. But the interesting thing about this is, I wasn't the only one that they were giving mental illness diagnosis to. It's not even a diagnosis. It's just they put this in documentation. Let's just make a distinction between diagnosis and documentation. And so right now I'm talking about the distinction between diagnosis and a documentation and the stigma that's attached to the documentation. Because there are people that are diagnosed with mental illness that need to get help from trauma. But there are those that are documented with mental illness, that they're just trying to silence and discredit from their stories, okay? So this is the evidence that I have provided to them, so they have ganged up on me, so to speak, to make sure that I don't tell anybody else about the power and understanding the DSM manual on diagnosing mental illness and some of these conversations today where we must not be allowed to, I'm going to say, adopt. We must be empowered, if you understand what I'm saying.
Can I interject real quick?
Absolutely.
You're speaking about the difference between diagnosis and documentation. I think all veterans can get their problems with from release of information. That's the list of all of our diagnoses with the, DSM.
Yes. Yeah, 4138. I'm familiar.
You can send that up with your VA form 21-4138 as part of your evidence from the VA themselves. But to get your proper diagnosis from the VA, you have to get your proper, which is actually called proper, from the release of information at the VA. But if they just tell you something, they put it on paper, it means nothing. It's not on your problems, but as
oh, no, absolutely. The conversation is open about women veterans' health, and your transition into the conversation is so vital because I'm a Desert Storm veteran. I'm a Desert Storm veteran. And the thing is, I think that the Desert Storm veteran is probably the most omitted population of veterans. When I met General Shinseki was the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, about four secretaries back. I've got to know most of all of the secretaries because their decisions are so crucial for policy. policy leads to congressional mandates and resolving our problems through funding. So when those secretaries are speaking to these legislative bodies about our health care, we want to make sure that we are part of that discussion. So the African-American or Black women veterans agenda is omitted through those platforms. There's not a committee that actually speaks specific to our issues. And the City for Women Veterans, which was established to address health care by Congresswoman Maxine Waters in 1994, today mostly is inundated by the LGBTQ community. Okay, so the conversation must be specific to gender. When they identify gender, they're saying, well, LGBTQ is a gender. Well, when we talked about gender 30 years ago, there was only two gender, male and female. That was the conversation. I'm looking for something more specific. So I've been arguing about you need to redefine sexuality and gender and make it a congressional mandate so that it becomes law rather than people trying to, I'm going to say, create a social construct within our government that has no validity to it. So my argument today is mostly about invalid conversations and language and terminologies that have no validity, because anything that happens with us that is regulated, it must go through Congress first. So
what, I think that's true, Jackie. I'm so sorry. Okay. So you remember when Dwight Elam began to teach the word minority about 2-3 times. You never said Black woman veteran not one time.
I believe that every veteran, Black female veteran, every veteran, needs to fill out a cemetery.
No. That's a powerful word. No. Not coming here. But for those female veterans that have had no choice but to isolate themselves because of their own mental
limitations. You did outstanding. What you're doing is, but let me just say about advocacy on my voice, I'm a little bit closer to the policy side. So if it's not written, it never happens. So we can talk about what they're doing and what policy that comes down and becomes our reality based on what they say. But I try to be at the table so that our voice can be in decision making. So if we until we're part of that conversation in Washington, D.C., when you hear about these decisions like whatever it is with cemeteries or the other three components or the benefits and the VHA side, well, I try to get on the conversation when they're before they go to Congress. So what happens with these committees down here, they hold a meeting about four times a year, most committees. So they have the Women Veterans Advisory Committee, and Ms. Irmer serves on Commissioner Irmer Cooper serves on the Minority Veterans Advisory. There is not a Black Veterans Advisory, which I've been urging Mr. Armstead to establish for 15 years. So the composure of the Black Veterans Advisory, as I see it, this is the voice that is missing in Washington, D.C. Every aspect of what we see and hear is not about what the needs are. It's about what those advisories send to the secretary that he represents through Congress that becomes law for us. It doesn't necessarily have to benefit anybody. You see what I'm saying? So what I'm saying to you is that if you can follow what I'm saying, I don't want to overtalk anyone, but in order for you to see what they're saying and how we're feeling about this, you will see 1,000 different resolutions or recommendations go to Congress every year that they have these committee meetings. And you will never hear anything about homelessness. You may never hear anything about anything that we are discovering about our existence, that is, why is the VA not addressing our issues? Why the VA don't never? Because most of the time we are not represented in that conversation, which is why I break the door. Well, I actually got, I proceed to the next level. I actually proceed to the next level, so I actually communicate. I'm waiting for them to give me my next interview, and hopefully that, but you know, more than anything, I don't want to lose my voice here. There's a lot of people that say they're advocates. You're not advocate until you're heard on the end of the decision maker. You see what I'm saying? So when I'm coming down here, I should be located down here for this meeting. Reason. When you're at the advisory committee meetings, and oftentimes they will put these committee meetings on the internet, particularly during COVID. What I also learned while I used to sit down here in these committee meetings, and I'd raise my hand and I'll send my notes, because, you know, you can't really talk right in these meetings. But I've been coming down here anyway, and I've been coming down here for many years. And for many years, I was the only one that would come down here. There is such an inconvenience to coming down here to sit in the advisory committee meeting. You see what I'm saying? There's somewhat of an inconvenience if you have a schedule. But for me, I made it a part. Oh. Oh, no. Please, by all means. But I want to talk to you more about the advisory committee, because I think that's still an open space. If we're going to do something, there's always a call to action with me. You see what I'm saying? The call to action. Beg your pardon?
I would love to help write a resolution for this time. And you know what, Lucia, that's why my hand is raised, because when you were talking about not having services for widows or whatever, and that's what I was going to tell you, we can get together and we can do a resolution and send it through the American Legion, and then it'll go forward, and that's what we need to do.
That's what I love about the American Legion. We write up resolutions and they go straight to Capitol Hill. I love that.
Yeah, and I was thinking, okay, so what can I do to prepare these women to have these things, you know, to get those kids together so that they can be armed and they can be equipped to do what they need to do to take care of themselves until everything else is clear.
I think of you just being here and having a voice on this, because I'm going to circulate this particular discussion. And I think your presence being here puts you in a huge role as to what we have at this table for as a resource. I do like the American Legion, which is why I served in the capacity that I did, Mom Vicki. Yes, I do like everybody family. So when I was serving in the last year as the American Legion, you know, there's a lot of racism that I had to contend with, okay? But then I met some of the best white guys in the world who would call me up and say, look, nobody better not, and I hate to use this term, I'm just going to use a letter, F with you, okay? And they were so proud of the fact that I was willing to stand in the gap at this crucial time during COVID. But racism, I call it an action. Racism is a practice. And so when we see people that are disrespecting us, we deal with them. We don't deal with it. I don't put a blanketed racist agenda on a particular platform, because I know that I have had white guys, Puerto Ricans, Spanish, Dominicans. I was married to Dominicans, so I know how to navigate across different cultures. But the thing is, there is a assumed fiction sometimes, particularly down in Washington, D.C. When we thought the males were keeping us from moving forward, there are women down here that present the biggest obstacle and challenge. Whether they are, I'm telling you, the women are by far the worst. They're worse than the men in terms of how they are assuming. I mean, they literally blocked me. They blocked me from going to Washington, D.C., and it's a government. They are taking it on, and they'll say our. They refer to the space that they're in as my. You know what I mean? They're taking on the government as some ownership. The government is not a person. It's not a corporation, you know? And so it's a language that they use that makes this very difficult. So getting back to what you were saying about the black farmers, the black women's farmers, you know, and how, you know, we can help them. I don't know if you meant for me with James Clyburn. James Clyburn passed a law in 2014 on black farmers. And I want you to research that law. Let me see if I can find it. But we'll talk about that. I meant to follow up with you about the black farmers. But James Clyburn, he's out of South Carolina. He's a majority leader in the Democratic Party. So you might want to reach out to his office, because when I reached out to him, I got a chance to meet him and talk about that with him. He recently lost his wife. And when I got a chance to talk about that, he was surprised that I was aware of that. So we even now with Marsha Fudge, who is the Secretary of Agriculture, this is a good place for you now to reach into her. She's the secretary. She's an African-American, black woman. And I've met her as well. And she's very in tune. And I'm going to tell you that we have black secretaries. When you have a black secretary in a position, what they're missing is connectivity. And what I find down here is, and I let me calm myself because I hear myself talking radical again. So what I find down here is when we have like Secretary Fudge, Marshall Fudge, right? A senior ranking member of Congress who is a she is a secretary. You were going to meet with her tomorrow? Oh, you know who you met with her before. You make sure you speak with her about the black farmers. This is what she's the Secretary of Agriculture. Is that why she's coming? Well, that's more housing on that side. But no, she's not Secretary of Agriculture. She was the Secretary of Agriculture before she became the Secretary of HUD. She was the Secretary of Agriculture, Marsha Fudge, okay? Dynamic woman who's also conscious, okay? And I got a chance to meet her several times in Philadelphia. But I want you to follow up with her office. And maybe there's some connectivity in there. But the secretary, these cabinet-level secretaries, these are powerful people. And you can't get to them. You see what I'm saying? But that's why it's important that we be organized and bring the power into one space and not try to be one voice. Because the secretaries will recognize, they will recognize when you come as a, like Mama B said, a resolution. It has to be one that is, I'm going to say impactful. It has to be far-reaching, you know, and all-encompassing, because I write letters all the time. This is how I got to the position where I am to be considered for this White House position, because I'm always writing. And another thing that I use to write, when they do proposals, so you get a regular update on all VA correspondence, okay, with regards to any proposed rule changes. Because this is what I have been doing for years. I just send my comments in. And this, you could do this. You could give me one. I'm just trying to follow up with you so I can let you know that where you are with this, there's already connectivity. I didn't want to miss that out of the, you know, recording that there was already some things there. Who was that? Oh, absolutely. Miss Penny, yes. Miss Petty has look, she's open access to whatever it is that on this table here. Isn't she beautiful though? Wanda, isn't she a wonderful representation for? Yeah. And she's so poised. And you know, she tells me to shut up. You know, Wanda is my mentor. She's helping me to structure. I've been. I'm improved, Miss Petty. I am improved. Miss Petty has helped me to develop a professional presence, but I just have to learn how to slow things down. When I'm used to doing a monologue on radio, I'm used to doing it for 2 hours just myself talking, giving updates and stuff like that. So I'm learning.
Yes.
I'm learning. Pray for me. Pray for me. For 5 years? Pray, continue to pray. As I would say, continue to keep my strength in the Lord in prayer. But the floor is yours, madam. I'm going to go back on mute. Mm-hmm. You going virtual?
Talk about something so that when we
I would love to see you, Mama V. I would love to see you connect with Miss Petty as a presenter to a particular group of potential veterans that may need that service that she provides. I'm telling you, she's very specific about identifying needs in veterans outside for quality of life along with the business, but it's a multi-themed approach that she has for supporting veterans. I think that I said that right, Sister Soldier. But I think that the American Legion could appreciate whether that is a contractual agreement or however that works with you all. But I think that she will provide an extreme value because this is what she does all around the country anyway. You know, and she has already has a developed program, can identify for reaching into for coaching or whatever level that their needs can be met.
Wanda, send me something about your program, something that I can put in, that I have in writing, so that I can present to the DEC, and then maybe we can get them to approve something for you.
One other thing for this panel, I would like to talk about the Black Women Veterans Health as a focus, and we can somewhat begin to narrow our scope. When we're talking generally about veterans, I myself am particularly focused on the Black veterans, whether it is omission in the discussion or how there is not necessarily a commission, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm looking for, if there's an issue where Black veterans are, you know, this thing, my phone is just going crazy. If there was some way that we can, for me, I like to have the specifics. Now, I know the American Legion has been very broad in their scope because they did in Philadelphia, they did an African-American, they actually featured Black youth of the urban community sometime this year. And they made it front page of the magazine. It was a beautiful, beautiful representation. But what I did not see is what it was connected to. You could take a picture for a national organization, but I did not see what it was connected to in terms of policy or any other outreach. So I'm listening to how the conversation can be shaped if it's going to be around Black women veterans health, whether it is, I think, agriculture, farming, is definitely particularly connected to nutrition and health and well-being. So under the Black Women Veterans Health, let us include... Can you please take the last word? Can you please take the last word? Because we have three more series of this to go, and these conversations are just flushing out, I think, some of the most specific needs for what we can dive into it next in our next week conversation. I think that you covered on the homelessness. I'm going to be able to identify that to follow up, but I want you to be specific. Certainly, I hope you will be present for our next week in this series, because this series is what's going to sum up what needs to be done to address the Black Women Veterans Health for what I believe the Veterans Blame Trust can certainly take ownership of for policy, legislation, and ultimately funding. You could be excused at 3 o'clock, but you ignite the fire in me, and I know that this work can be done. So we're looking at hashtag 10319, 2023, Veterans Brain Trust. This will be our platform. We are going to bring this thing to fruition. I'm not about wasting time, your time or my time for a half an hour conversation or an hour and a half. This is going to be a reality for the nation. So hashtag 10319 will encompass homelessness. It will encompass the black farmers. It will encompass all of the legislative agendas that you brought into. But on the other end of that, if our voice is missing, there's an omission. We call it a gap analysis. The gap analysis, where our voice is it? So we want to make sure that our voices are being heard. And I think that's to your point, Ms. Petty, if you want to get the last say on that, talk about where our voice can be, you know, utilized. You have the broadest platform for reaching out to women veterans in this country in terms of black women veterans at a reach. You see what I'm saying? In terms of radio and media. Oh, it's powerful. And as you... recording a radio show, so I'm doing two shows in one. So Women Veterans Speak, we are just delighted to have Lakeisha Stringer, Navy veteran extraordinaire, with us. Wanda Petty, oh my God, so honored to have you take time out, because we know how valuable your time is when your feet are on the ground, because you are flying off someplace all the time. So thank you so much. But I have about 30 minutes left into our Women Veterans Internet Radio, where we are going to continue to talk a little bit about the recap of this conversation. So, yes, I'm talking to you all, but I'm also talking on the radio program. So I know y'all got the scat, but you all be back. next week, I'm going to make sure that the invite goes out very soon and get it on your calendar. Thank you for your commitment to this. I waste no one's time. If you're in it, I'm in it to win it, and I promise you the fight is going to be worth it. You're leaving me too, Wanda. But listen, for dropping in, so I'm going to head on off to my finish up my Women Veterans radio program, and I'm just so delighted to have such a wonderful, successful conversation today. I'm not going to say anything else to y'all. I'm talking to the radio now, so if y'all still here, it's because y'all want to be here. I love you both. I'm going to go, guys. I'm gonna end this call. Have a blessed one the rest of the day. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining us in that dialogue with Lakeisha Stringer, three-time deployed Navy veteran, discussant, and participant at the 2022 Veterans Brain Trust here in Washington, D.C. on September the 30th. We had Vicki Dukes, who is the district commander of Columbus, Georgia for the American Legion. And we also had Wanda Petty, Sister Soldier, who has joined us in our today's broadcast. And we are actually talking about where are we going with this? What is our call to action? So we're bringing in these resources, the recap around the Veterans Brain Trust, women, Black women veterans health, and the elevation, as I was so corrected by Lakeisha Stringer, as to how we are going to continue to push this agenda. And on the 30th anniversary for the Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust, we will be coalescing around what we have discussed through these broadcasts. I'm also looking forward to hearing from as many organizations between now and next year that will contribute to the effort and see how we can begin to promote make a necessary presence here for Black women veterans health and some of the omissions in the conversation. What are some of the platforms that are existing that where we are missing out, where we are missing out on so much because there are closed doors to the voice of Black veterans who, as you can see, have tremendous ability to articulate our issues. And with all due respect to all of the women veterans organizations in the United States of America, please feel free to chime in, and we will always be open to the discussions that are occurring in your communities and localities across America, because we understand the demographics and geographics of our existence certainly does impact how we transition and some of the circumstances that somewhat prevail where our lives may be impacted. So I'm going to make sure that Georgia is at the front, and we are using certainly the, I'm going to say the impetus by which we've been provided through Georgia and the district commander, who has much respected there, having established a post in 2014 and maintain a membership to keep open what would be a somewhat of a complex position, I guess, you know, when you're trying to work from within another organization, and there are several times resolutions that must be passed, and it takes it's a process. So we're working within the American Legion through the Georgia district, where both Vicki Dykes and Lakeisha Stringer are both resident and actively involved in women veteran research, very much conscious of the surroundings that they're in and some of the difficulties that we are facing. I did want to also just spend a little bit around genomics, the topic of the science within our healthcare system. When you talk about Black women veterans healthcare, the JAMA, the Journal of Association of Medical, the Journal Association of Medical, please forgive me for forgetting what that stood for, but they announced about a July of the a publication by David Auslan out of Philadelphia, who studied pharmacogenetics on MDD, major depressive disorder. And so this conversation, I think, is so important because what is happening today is genomics with regards to the National Science Foundation on realizing the potential genomics across the continuum of precision healthcare. And this particular workshop encompasses a roundtable on genomics, and it is the health and medicine division on the board of health science. And we want to make sure that that conversation actually makes sense here. There were some testimonials here with regards to the genomics conversation. And what was discussed was that some of the urgent care that had occurred in the lives of some of those who had testified and their relatives had that urgent care precipitated with some genomic studies, then they could have predicted some of the conditions that were life-threatening that their urgent care in another situation revealed. So we want to continue to talk about genomics in the Black community and the need to understand our heritage. Listen, as Blacks who are descendants of slaves in America, we do not know how our DNA is dispersed. We do not know what encompasses our DNA, which is the cellular or the molecular makeup for our how we function. And sometimes I think that knowing that scientific aspect of who we are, and I think it's going to be relative to how the science is interpreted moving forward, particularly on the psychological side with regards to MDD, major depressive disorder, there are other conditions that can be predictable through genome studies. And I believe that the health and medicine division is diving into that today. So for the rest of the day, we're going to be talking about some of the things that they're going to be discussing in this roundtable, realizing the potential of genomics across the continuum of precision healthcare. And this workshop comprises of a roundtable of genome scientists, presenters, researchers, and those who have experienced, I'm going to say, extreme critical care that could have been predicted had genome studies been offered to them. And I think what we are talking about is when you go into the doctor, it is your option, or they should make it mandatory that genome assessments be available if you so choose, which means that they can use your DNA to follow your, I'm going to say, your genetic track. A genetic marker sometimes can help them to identify what could be most predictable for your DNA, what could be most predictive for your genetics. So genome studies is going to be a critical part of our future, and I do believe that Black Americans, and certainly within the VA with regard to mental health, I do think that genome studies should be as prevalent on other physiological conditions and health care. So we must make sure that the genome conversation crosses the veterans, specific to algorithms that they use in kidney transplants. I think genome therapy is certainly critical because many a times these algorithms will kick out or omit a certain screening or processing that will deny Black veterans from their getting on to waiting lists for a certain transplant, an organ. And we want to make sure that we are participating in these studies and what is they're saying here, just realizing the potential of genomics across continuum of precision healthcare is that informed consent. Informed consent is so key. You can't just give a research agenda without an informed consent. There is a legal international law on how research is to be conducted, which I do believe under the Health Administration here at the Health and Human Services and under the United States Attorney General, that there is an omission in this process that may be a violation. And I think that it is important enough that we continue to talk about where these violations or these gaps in servicing our communities with regards to genome studies based on research and other type of, human subject participation that it qualifies under the National Institute of Health and other international laws for protecting human subjects in research. So this is a really great day to talk about where we are in the conversation, because there is a huge platform on human existence here in terms of health, studying health, and solving some of these problems. And we'll continue to talk about it here on this platform as we move into the transition for what platform will be established as a collective on Black women veterans' health. And today we did discuss some follow-up discussions from the Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust on Black women veterans' health, where we believe that there were some discrepancies that need to be addressed with regards to representation by Black women veterans, and also what was the center of the conversation, which was the omnibus bill, which was not specific to Black women veterans' health, and there was no connectivity in how Black women veterans could benefit from the $9 billion funding package that was mentioned, by Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who we plan to, at least the National Alliance of Women Veterans, will be communicating some of that concern to her office over the next few months as we move closer to the decisions on how we're going to propel the various conversations, whether the American Legion will use their platform to write a resolution through their national office, and how that will circulate throughout the country is going to be paramount for addressing Black women veterans' health as a very specific agenda, not more generalized through DEIA, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which I do believe that somewhat restricts the conversation. It restricts the conversation, but yet it broadens it beyond a particular focus. And I think we must not be as generalized due to the characteristics that Black women veterans are dealing with and contending, where they don't have a representative in the discussions where policy is being, I'm going to say, discussed. And that's where we need to make sure that we are being heard and at the table. So today, again, we thank Lakeisha Stringer for her generous time and inviting her commander, Vicki Dykes, and the mention of the American Legion vice chair, and Patricia, who was so generous to join us in our time last week, as did Dr. Leela Campbell, and Commissioner Irma Cooper, who actually just amazing in how she represents across the government within these spaces where we're actually hearing what some of the very strategic intelligence is. She's very astute in both military protocols, where she's held roles, and supporting the same type of activities that are transitioning as challenges for many women veterans and veterans in general. So we just want to commend, in our absence, Commissioner Irma Cooper of California, and our Vice Commander of the American Legion, the first African-American woman to hold that position. Of course, Delphine Foster, who we've communicated to as a supporter out of Southern California, has been the first woman to lead a national service organization in the Disabled American Veterans National Service Organization. That would be Delphine Foster, a longtime advocate and veteran within and outside of the Department of Veterans Affairs, where she has contributed on so many levels. We're just glad to have this growing network, and hopefully that small voice would be significant to where we can go in our conversation, and how the research through my work will be certainly beneficial for the future of Black women veterans who are descendants of slaves here in America. And I think this is a really great time to make sure that pathway becomes clear, that pathway becomes accessible, and certainly it is duplicatable so that it can be modeled for communities that have or lack certain resources. We want the VA to know that we are working, you know, on behalf of those who have no voice, and certainly for those who have are missing from the table. So we are grateful for today's program, and let's just continue to support one another, support our sisters. We are seen and heard on LinkedIn at Kat Santos. We are also on Facebook at Philly Vet. You also find work at Harriet Tubman, Philly Vet, Philly Vet author, where my book is being shared, and the Desert Storm brings in my particular story on my congressional role here and bringing this legislation to a foundation to establish women veterans facilities for treating them in the healthcare facilities throughout America. And I think that is significant. Also, that we have brought now conversations that those who have established platforms can find an open door here to share what contributions that they would like to make to share with others. Certainly, we're not doing this for ourselves. And I want to congratulate all of these women veterans advocates that I did 30 years ago, because this is something that I think is necessary. It is legislated, congressional law. And the mandate that was established as a consequence is significant for where we are today. Without it, I don't think that we would be in this place. Certainly, the Veterans Brain Trust undergirded that impetus for me to go to Congress in 1993, along with the NAACP. And those particular platforms must be 30 years ago, and we will collaborate with them, hopefully, into the 2023 conversation and platform at the 2023 Congressional Black Caucus Veterans Brain Trust. And I would like to give a shout out to my dear friend and mentor, Mr. Ron Armstead, who is certainly the founder and visionary for the Veterans Brain Trust, who has undergirded this work for the past 34, 35 years, and bringing Black issues to the forefront, and certainly for being somewhat of a conduit for the Congressional Medal of Honor for the 6888. That was spearheaded by Edna Cummings, as well as the Congressional Medal of Honor, which was recently passed for the Muffleport Marines. Mr. Joe Geeter, he's the president of the Philadelphia chapter of the Muffleport Marines. And I tell you, it's a growing conversation. And I want to just give a shout out to Mr. Victor Latrone, who is recently appointed to the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office of the White House under this administration, led by who is a member of the Black Veterans Empowerment Council. And all of these great people doing this great work, I'm certain will be moving in a direction where all roads will lead to home for solving the problems and for continuing to promote significant legislation that rings true to who needs to get it, and who will receive it, and who can actually pass the baton and share that resource with someone who may not have easy access. Black women veterans' health certainly has been the topic of our discussion. This is series two of, I'm looking at 4 to 5 series of this to bring this conversation to full closure, addressing the challenges, barriers, and obstacles, and certainly to begin to focus on what resolutions we can establish to present as a result. And I think that will be significant for how we can value this platform and what will come of it, and if there will not be a waste of time or a lapse in service for what has been a history of work for the National Alliance of Women Veterans. It was the very first woman veterans organization to address sexual assault in the country, and I'm very proud to say that I, and along with several of the women veterans, were at the table there when this was a very unfamiliar and an unpopular topic in the mainstream of conversations on legislation and policy for women and veterans. So this is about legislation, policy, a call to action and to establish a platform for women veterans who participate in these platforms. We are bringing this to a close. Please have a wonderful day. Look to share this information as we distribute it out through our network. And thank you for joining us on the day. This is Kathy Bennett Santos, host, Women Veterans Speak, founder of the National Alliance of Women Veterans. And we are out.